Have you ever seen the 80s movie, The Untouchables? It's one of my favorites of all time. It's played by Kevin Costner and Sean Connery, Andy Garcia, and of course, the great Robert De Niro. It's a movie about the capture of the notorious Chicago gangster, Al Capone. Now, in the movie, Kevin Costner plays Elliot Ness, who's a Treasury agent for the United States government, and he's been tasked with going out and trying to find and legally capture Al Capone. And it's not an easy task. Right off the bat, he's got to go and basically recruit and find his own specialized team, mainly because he just can't trust anybody in the Chicago Police Department. And so therefore, he goes out and he recruits guys like Sean Connery's character and Andy Garcia's character. Now, after a few miserable failures and attempts to try to find Capone, Costner finally says to Connery, "Hey, I need your help here." And to that, Sean Connery says one of my favorite lines, one of my favorite quotes in the movie. He says this: "So you say you want to get Capone. You see, what I'm asking here is, what are you prepared to do?" And to that, Costner says, "Anything within the law." And a great reply from Sean Connery. He says, "And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the can on these worms, you better be prepared to go all the way." You see, what Sean Connery is actually asking here is, how committed are you to this task? I mean, are you all the way in, fully in, or are you only halfway in and halfway committed? I've come to believe that Jesus is asking the very same thing of us. What are we prepared to do? In the book of John, in chapter 6, we find Jesus going to an area, the northeastern region of the Sea of Galilee, and he's gone there to teach people and work miracles and do his thing. So what we see is that Jesus is going to preach this sermon that we typically call the Sermon on the Mount. Now, in this sermon, and I keep doing this to the word sermon because mainly it really wasn't the kind of sermon that we typically think of today. But Jesus is there teaching, and in this one sermon, he is going to reveal some serious God knowledge to the people that have come. And the people that have come are just trying to catch a glimpse of Jesus. They've heard all about him. They've come from all over, from different villages and different areas all around the Sea of Galilee to come and be around him, to come hang out with him, to come hear what he has to say, and maybe some of them to be healed, and then maybe others to witness something miraculous. Now, during this time at the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is going to do like three main things. And the first thing he's going to do is, the sermon's kind of called the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes is really, the word is just a word that kind of represents those who God thinks is living the right way. They're living the good life. So he's going to teach on the Beatitudes. He's going to teach everyone there how to pray, a new way to pray. And then he's going to perform like one of his most famous miracles, which is the feeding of the 5,000. Now, as I just stated, people are going to come out from all over around this area to come and see Jesus. And we call the feeding of the 5,000. But in reality, though, back in those days, they only counted men, fully grown men. So really, the count is little more than that. Of course, it's going to be more than that. I mean, 5,000 men alone, you know, there's probably at least 5,000 women there, probably a lot more. And that's not even including children. So the total could easily be 10 to 15,000 people coming from all over to hear Jesus teach. So it's kind of like going to a major basketball, college basketball game. There's 15 to 20,000 people in the stands, and Jesus comes stepping on the floor to teach. So Jesus takes only a few small loaves of bread, 5 to be exact, and only a few fish, 2, and he puts them in a basket and prays to God and he gives thanks. And has his students pass these out to everyone everywhere. So as a piece of bread gets taken out of the basket, it's almost like 3 pieces replace every one they take out. So instead of the bread being subtracted from the basket every time a piece is taken out, it's actually multiplied somehow. Everyone is fed to the full, and even leftovers are taken up. A very amazing moment in Jesus' ministry and in these people's lives. A miracle for sure. So after Jesus performs the miracle, he tells his students, the disciples, that he wants them to take a boat and to go over on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And they're going to go to a western part of the sea in a town called Capernaum. And so they do that. They get in a boat and they only make it a couple of miles though, and this massive, horrible storm comes up and they literally can't row anymore because the storm is so bad. And this is the part that we probably pretty much know of when Jesus comes and walks out on the water to them and meets them out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Also in Matthew, Matthew writes about Peter when he gets up out of the boat and goes and walks out on the water with Jesus. This is all in the same time. So eventually they make it over to Capernaum. Now, the next day, while they're in Capernaum, all these thousands of people who came out to hear Jesus are now figuring out that Jesus is nowhere. He's gone. And they want to know where he went. And so they kind of deduce, because there's a boat missing, that he's taken a boat and he's gone over to Capernaum, and they're going to go and do the same thing. And so they do. A big bunch of them, probably not all 15,000 people, but a big bunch of them go to figure out where Jesus has gone. And they get to Capernaum and they actually do find him there. And they come up to him and they say this, "Rabbi," which meant teacher, "when did you get here?" Now, to the common person, this looks like a very simple question from someone who is wanting to be around Jesus for the right reasons. But Jesus answers, "You've come looking for me not because you saw God in my actions, but because I fed you. I filled your stomachs, and for free." At this point, this is where Jesus kind of has his come to Jesus meeting, kind of, with these seemingly pure in heart people. He kind of lays everything out on the line for them, and he lets them know one very important fact about who he is that he has been sent by God with a very specific purpose. He tells them, keeping with the whole bread theme here, that humans are constantly searching for bread, and the bread that only lasts for a while. And the type of bread that we typically go for is the type that doesn't even satisfy or nourish our deepest part of who we are. He claims to have bread that will never go bad, that will quench our deepest hunger, and that lasts forever. Of course, these people are interested and they ask, "Master, give us this bread now and forever." And Jesus' simple reply is, "I am the bread of life." And he says, "The person who aligns with me hungers no more and thirsts no more ever." And this sounds pretty great, I would think. And it would seem that these people whom he's talking to, they should be ready to go. But Jesus knows deeper and he says, "I have told you this explicitly because even though you have seen me in action, you don't really believe me. But anyone who eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise that person on the last day. For my flesh is true food and my blood is true drink." So to the ordinary person, much like these people, this sounds a little gross, kind of, you know, like almost vampire-ish. And they're left like dumbfounded, almost clueless. They still don't know what the point is. And that's a good question. What is the point? What's the point to all this? Well, the point is if we come to have a relationship with God, the whole God of the universe, then Jesus, he has come to make a way for that to happen, a direct path for us to have that relationship. But it can only come to be if we're serious, if we take it seriously. Like, how dedicated are we? What are we prepared to do? Like all serious, healthy relationships, it doesn't work if one part is only giving half, is only going halfway. It's only half dedicated. A true healthy relationship works only when both parts are giving 100% each. This is not a 50-50 deal. And so for these people, they liked the idea of Jesus. They just weren't really ready to go all in. I mean, they really liked Jesus being around. They loved having him around. But they didn't really love or really like the idea of him being the center of their world, of Jesus being the purpose for living. And since that was the case, they didn't give very much into the relationship, and therefore they missed out. Not only did they not invest much, they actually kind of saw what he was saying as like, man, this is a lot of work. Too much work. And for them, it seemed like it was way too hard. Most of them there, if not all of them, actually turned away and walked away from Jesus and went back to life as normal. And I can't imagine that. I can't wrap my brain around that. I kind of wonder, you know, if I was in their position and I had seen the things that he had done and I had heard the things that he had said, and could I and would I just walk away and go back to normal? In 2004, an episode of the show Sex and the City instantly made popular a phrase that would help women understand the mind of a man. And by the way, as they said, probably wasn't very hard. Anyway, the phrase was born out of a desire to wonder why a guy hadn't called a day after a date, leaving a woman confused and disappointed. The phrase, "he's just not that into you," was born. It's kind of easy to understand why a guy hasn't called or texted. I mean, he's just not that into you. It's kind of an easy philosophy to get. If a guy is into you or if he's interested, you know, he acts like it. And in a normal situation, if someone is interested in somebody, they act like it or they pursue it. And you pursue or go after something that you find worthwhile. I mean, that's exactly how we work as human beings. And Jesus is kind of saying the same thing here. Only those who find worth in him because they know who he is, those are the ones that give 100%. They go all in. And for them, they find satisfaction and they find meaning and purpose and they find wholeness. But for these people that we were talking about, those who got their bellies filled with bread, they just weren't that into Jesus. There's a real spiritual dilemma in our world today. It's called part-time Christianity. It's those who really aren't that into Jesus, but just enough to think that they're, you know, we're okay. Jesus and I, we're good. And in part-time Christianity, if someone is only truly part-time with God, then they kind of end up misrepresenting who God really is. And they may say things that Jesus never really said or do things that Jesus never really asked us to do. It'd almost be like you and I having friends on social media, and we do. Friends from our past, like for me, 20, 30, maybe even 40 years ago. Friends from high school that may knew of who I was back in those days, but they don't really know me now. And so they end up maybe saying things about me that might have been true because of something they heard or they were part of back in the high school glory days, but they're not really true of me today. And having a part-time relationship with God is kind of the same thing. You're going to end up taking bits and pieces of what Jesus said in the New Testament and kind of just fitting them into our normal way of life. And when you do that, you typically end up misrepresenting God and you end up painting a picture of him that actually doesn't even look like him at all. And also, we tend to create unrealistic expectations. You know, high expectations from very low commitment level. And all that does is end up leaving everybody frustrated. It leaves us frustrated, and it leaves God frustrated. And also, you know, trying to just take things Jesus said or bits and pieces of God and fitting them into our lives, I mean, that doesn't work either. It never does. Because Jesus doesn't really fit into the way we do things. I mean, isn't that kind of the idea here? Since Jesus is the way, he's the true bread, and if we partake of him, if we eat of that true bread, then of course we're going to get all the benefits of that. We get to experience what life truly is about and a new way of doing that. But using Jesus just to get free bread from a part-time standpoint, that's just not going to do anything. We'll never be able to experience truth because we just keep doing the same things that we always do, and we end up getting extremely frustrated and dissatisfied in life. And also, those around us on an everyday basis, they get really, really confused by our version of God. I'd like to encourage you to do two things. Number one, ponder that question. What are you prepared to do? And two, if your answer to that question is to eat the bread of life because you realize who he really is, which is the answer to life's biggest question, why, then go all the way by allowing yourself to dig much deeper into knowing him truly. Because only through him can we experience true life and true fulfillment. but that only comes from going all in to His way by aligning our life with His completely and entering into a full-time intimate relationship with Him. You know, it just might be time to quit using Jesus for free bread and instead come and see and taste that He is the true bread of life.